supporting WHYY Penn Medicine, helping to find new cures for cancer. With life-saving clinical trials and advanced surgical techniques, Penn Medicine is offering more hope for patients everywhere. Learn more at PennMedicine.org/cancer. Penn Medicine, what's next?
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we're in the stretch now, cats and kittens. In just a little bit, we'll explain which of you can successfully fix up your lawns right now and which of you should probably start planning to do it in August. We'll provide all the details after a couple more of your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Ann, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hello.
Hello, Ann. How are you?
I'm fine. How are you?
I am just ducky, thank you. Where is Ann Fine?
In Dayton, Ohio.
Always nice to hear from our listeners there. What can we do for you?
Well, last summer, we started noticing large patches of my mother's yard that were, like, torn up. It looked like some critter had been out there digging. Now, this spring, those same patches are brown all around, and they're large, like 10 by 8, and there's at least 3 or 4 of them.
Right.
And I'm wondering what you think the problem might be. Might it be grubs? And then the grass has died in those areas.
Right. So here's the deal. Scarab beetles, Japanese beetles, June beetles, the Oriental beetle that flies by night, all of these plant-eating, armored flying scarab beetles lay their eggs in soil or lawns. The eggs turn into grimy white grubs. And especially the larva, the grubs of the Japanese beetle, they feed on lawn roots in the late summer, fall, which correlates to the timing that you first saw the grass looking bad.
Yes.
And in the late summer and early fall, if you see grass turning brown, you know, in your part of Ohio, you know, where there's cool season grasses, it's not unusual for grass to turn a little brown and be dormant during the top part of the summer. But as the summer eases off, if that grass was cut correctly and cared for correctly, it'll green right back up again. Grass that goes in the opposite direction generally has grub damage, and it's real easy to check. You can just lift up a piece of grass, and it'll come up like a brown carpet. And they're feeding very close to the surface, and they're very large at that point. So it's kind of squirrely, but you'll definitely see what the damage is. But grubs don't cause, like, holes in the lawn or torn-up patches. Now, you don't have raised tunnels or real obvious holes, right?
No, I haven't seen anything like that.
So then my diagnosis is skunks. This happens more frequently than people realize. Skunks are nocturnal. They feed by night, and they are total carnivores. And what they do is they'll be crossing over your lawn on their little skunky way back and forth somewhere, and they'll actually hear and perhaps even smell the grubs underground, and then they'll tear up the lawn, making little holes, but not tunnels or anything like that. They're not going into it. They're just digging up patches of the lawn and eating the grubs. Sometimes they'll do this to get at earthworms, but it's my understanding that it's almost always grubs. So you're in Ohio. There's not much you can do right now. Who cares for this lawn?
My brother.
Okay, so you want to make sure that your brother cuts the entire lawn at 3 inches high, no shorter than that.
Okay.
And before he cuts it, probably for the first time this season, it's imperative that he get a new blade for the mower or get the old blade sharpened. So here's what we're going to do. He's going to ratchet up that mower deck, and he's going to measure what's left. Make sure he's not cutting it too short, because that will always end up with brown patches, and also make it easier for, you know, skunks and other critters to get there. So we're just going to spend the summer cutting what we have, and then I want you, and we're going to be repeating this advice over and over again, I want you to circle August 15th on your calendar.
Okay.
And that's when we want to go in, or you want to go in, and you want to try to sow matching grass seed in the damaged areas. But then at the same time, I want you to get a product called Milky Spore.
Okay, Milky Spore.
Milky Spore. It's a naturally occurring, quote, disease in the soil. But the only thing it makes sick is beetle grubs. If you apply Milky Spore as directed on the package, right around this same time, end of August, beginning of September, the Milky Spore will enter the soil. The soil will be warm. Any grubs that are feeding will instantly be killed by the Milky Spore. And then their bodies become little factories, making more of the Milky Spore disease. So treating the lawn with this natural substance, it'll make it grub-free for absolute decades. And without the grubs to attract them, I think this same family of skunks could walk across the lawn and they won't be digging it up.
Okay, well, I will give it a try. I hope that it works.
All right, good luck, Ann.
Thank you. Have a good day.
You too.
Bye.
1-888-346-9499. Kay, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike.
Hello, Kay. How are you?
Good. How are you?
I am just ducky, thanks. And where is Kay?
In Ballykin Wood.
Oh, okay. A great little suburb of Philadelphia. What can we do for Kay in Bala?
I am going to try very hard to keep my property light on the mosquitoes this year.
Okay.
And I've been researching how to do that without using sprays and pesticides.
Mm-hmm.
So a neighbor contacted me about a company called Mosquito Platoon offering packages for people to spray, I think it was 6 times over the course of the next 3 or 4 months to try to keep the mosquitoes down, and offering special deals to consumers who bring in their friends for volume discount.
So have they signed up for it and they came to recruit you and you sent them on their way?
Yes, that's exactly what happened. But I wanted to, when I told them I wasn't interested, I wanted to also give them good advice about alternatives.
Well, it's funny because we've talked about mosquitoes so much lately, and we're not going to stop. I mean, it's an important topic, especially since Dr. Dina Fonseca from Rutgers told us there's evidence that gardeners get bit by mosquitoes more often than normal people, you know, because we're outside so much and often at the times that the mosquitoes are out there. And it seems like there's a new mosquito-borne illness a day. And we've been focusing on BTI, on using this naturally occurring soil organism that's available in dunks and briquettes and granules to not only treat standing water to kill any mosquito larvae in it, but to create traps for the female mosquitoes to lay their eggs in the treated water. And the female mosquito will think she's completed her mission, but the eggs will never hatch. And one thing that kind of had escaped my, what the feeble thing I call my memory, was for many years now, we've also been talking about garlic oil sprays. There is a product that was discovered accidentally. It was originally called Garlic Barrier, and I think it's still sold under that name. Organic farmers, I believe, in California were using this concentrated garlic oil spray just as a general insect repellent on their plants. And their gardeners, their workers, reported not being bitten, that there were no mosquitoes in the around the farm anymore. And so it was tested, and it was found to be very repellent, not only to mosquitoes, but to ticks and biting midges and things like that. So the same product was also then double branded and sold as Mosquito Barrier. And what I'm leading up to is these companies are all over the country now. And, you know, generally they're part of a landscaping business, and this is another service they're offering. Well, I just got an email, and I mean literally just this week, from listeners in Virginia. I can't remember if it was the Tidewater area or the D.C. area, but their local franchise, by demand, was now offering a botanical alternative. They could come and spray probably the the spray of choice is pyrethrins, which is what the chemical sprays are composed of. But this company, for people like you, is offering a mix of three different botanicals. The names don't jump to my mind. It's not garlic oil, but I know there's been a lot of research since the original discovery of garlic oil, and a lot of these botanical essences have been found to be equally effective, if not perhaps more effective. So that's one possibility. I mean, this company may not offer that non-toxic option, but it's certainly worth a call, don't you think?
Oh, I do. That's excellent advice. So maybe if they offer the botanicals, then a mixture of using the BTI dunkers in certain places and then getting some spray would be very helpful.
Oh, yeah. I think, because we know that even the BTI, when it was sprayed in urban areas and tests, was tremendously effective. So even if they've already signed a contract and the alternative is being offered, maybe you could, form a good neighbor policy with them. Say you'll buy into it if they'll get the non-toxic spray.
Absolutely. That's very worthwhile.
And if the company doesn't offer it, they need to hear this over and over again so that they'll then imitate that other company.
Terrific.
All right, Kay. Good luck and don't get bit.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
Bye.
All right. As promised, it's time for the question of the week. Growing grass in the springtime. Grass allergic Alexis Landis, producer of You Bet Your Garden. Would you get us started with this week's question?
I'd be happy to. Patty in Elkton, Maryland writes, "My lawn is mostly weeds. I recently removed a large bed of English ivy that surrounded two dogwood trees and bordered the driveway. I want to plant grass seed this spring, but I'm not sure which type. Can you give me some advice?"
Well, the seeds of the cool season grasses that people normally want to grow in Maryland and the other mid-Atlantic and northeast states, like bluegrass and fescue, don't germinate until the soil temperature gets to be up around 70 degrees, and that's as measured 4 inches down. But because Mother Nature doesn't like you, crabgrass and other weed seeds germinate at around 55 degrees. So by the time any bluegrass or fescue gets growing, the weeds have had a month-long head start.
And most of those weeds love hot summer weather. But bluegrass and fescue?
Yeah, not so much. The cool season grasses we use for our lawns come from parts of Europe, mainly the UK, where the weather is generally cool. Summer heat stresses them greatly, especially when they're only about a month old. So by the time you can get the seed to germinate in the north, summer heat burns it up because, it's just so puny.
Hulk smash, puny grass.
Leave your picture and bio at the door. No, and it's summer smash, puny grass.
Right. But if you instead wait until the recommended time frame to sow cool season grass seed, around mid-August in most mid-Atlantic regions, the seed will sprout immediately in the warm soil, and the young grass will grow up in the cool conditions it loves.
And by the time that grass has to face its first summer, it's almost a year old and well-established. Cool season lawns sown in late summer are always going to be healthier and much more sustainable than ones that were sown in the spring.
But you can lay cool season sod in the spring.
Absolutely. Now, sod is more expensive than seed, but it's a great choice if you have an area that really needs to look good fast, like when you're prepping a house for sale. And spring is when you're generally going to find the best quality sod at garden centers. But the installation is hard work. You need to remove a good amount of soil to make sure that the sod level will match your existing walkways. Sod is also really heavy, especially in bulk. And it's also perishable. It needs to be installed the same day it's delivered. So you really need to pay for professional installation.
And she has trees. Their shade may have been the reason the ivy was there. She may end up missing that ivy.
Ah, she might not have to miss it for long. Ivy is really hard to eradicate. The smart money says that at least some of hers is going to grow back.
Well, if it does, she could spend the next few months really getting rid of it and then have the surface properly prepared for seeding at the correct time of year. August isn't that far away.
Right, and most people don't budget nearly enough time for preparation when they put in a new lawn. She'll want to try and really finish off the ivy, then have some premium topsoil or compost delivered and spread to act as a seed bed. The roots of the new grass are going to need at least a little bit of decent soil to grow in before they start bouncing off the roots of her trees. But she also needs to be realistic about those trees. Even the most shade-tolerant grass needs a good 4 hours of sun a day.
So if the area is really shady, she might want to consider moss or a shade-loving ground cover.
Like ivy!
That was mean.
But well-timed. Okay, let's review the options for her and the thousands of others in this situation. First, if you live in a warm climate, you're in luck, because warm season grasses like Bermuda and St. Augustine should be installed in the spring, as should buffalo grass, a warm season Native American grass that's a great choice in some of the Central Plains states.
And people anywhere can install zoysia grass plugs in the spring.
Yes, zoysia, the warm season grass that can survive the coldest winters. You just have to be okay with it going tan and dormant from late fall to early spring.
If you can't deal with that, the best quality sod is available in the spring. But what about people who have a terrible-looking lawn but can't afford sod?
Well, our resident turf grass expert, Dr. Nick Christians, always says to just cut whatever you have at 3 inches high and start planning now to do a really good job of installing a new lawn in August. Really research what kind of grasses are going to be best in your situation instead of making an impulse buy that could haunt you for years. Find a good source of compost and topsoil to give the seed something decent to grow in, and then start really prepping the surface. Repeated tilling, for instance, is a great way to get rid of weeds without herbicides.
Then you'll need to level the area, spread the compost and topsoil on the surface, and level that out before seeding. You're right, this could take until August.
Actually, it will if you do it right. Well, that sure was some good information about hot and cold running lawns now, wasn't it? Luckily for you, the question of the week appears in print at the Gardens Alive website. To read it over in detail with links to lots more articles about chemical-free lawn care, just click the link for the question of the week at our website, youbetyourgarden.org. Gardens Alive supports the You Bet Your Garden question of the week. Yikes, my producer is threatening to coddle my crabgrass if I don't get out of this studio. We must be out of time. But you can call us anytime at 1-888-346-9499 or send us your email, your tired, your poor, your wretched refuse teeming towards our garden shore at garden@whyy.org. Please include your location. And visit our website, youbetyourgarden.org, where nobody cares about your location and where you will find the answers to all those questions you were going to email us about. Audio of this show, past shows, and our podcast. Elizabeth Perez Luna is executive producer of audio content for WHYY. Ken Queter plays our theme song. Our engineer this week is Al Banks. Our social media director is Amanda McGrath. Check out her fine work and like us at the You Bet Your Garden Facebook page. Rich Banowitz keeps our website weed-free, assisted by that savage she-devil Sarah Kazar, queen of the savage land and now the Appalachian Trail. Alexis Landis produces You Bet Your Garden for WHYY-FM in Philadelphia and would not do the Appalachian Trail if you paid her. Our editor, Al Banks, thinks he would like to do the trail if it didn't involve being outdoors. Our intern, Eileen Kelly, says the trail has to come to her. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. I have spent well over a collective year camping out, so give me the trail patch and go home so I can see you again next week. Little amphibians are already peeping their appreciation for the start of spring. I'm Mike McGrath, and on the next thrilling episode of You Bet Your Garden, we'll discuss what to do if you don't got no frogs or toads to call your own, plus your fabulous phone calls. Welcome to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath, and we got a jam-packed show for you today, cats and kittens. We are going to talk about lawn care in the question of the week, specifically why everybody's lawn looks so ratty this time of year and what they can do about it. We're also going to talk about a great program turning veterans into organic farmers. That's a lot to do, so we are going to hop right to your fabulous phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Patty, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How are you?
I am just ducky today, Patty. Thank you so much. How are you?
Good.
And where is Patty Good?
I am in Bucks County, Pennsylvania.
Oh, a nice area just outside of Philadelphia.
Very
great gardens out in that part of the country. What can we do for Patty in Bucks County?
Well, I heard you speaking the other day and mentioning that wood mulch is not recommended, like around your plants and stuff. And from what I see, that's what they sell in all your garden centers, and that's what a lot of people put around their plants, myself included. And I'm wondering, what should I be using instead of mulch?
I can tell you that even as recently as the 1980s, you never saw wood mulch. You never saw these mulching seasons. You never saw these people with landscapes the color of a Burger King. What happened is wood waste was no longer allowed to be trucked to landfills. So this huge industry of shipping and dyeing this stuff sprung up. And then it was heavily marketed to people. Now, wood mulch is okay to keep down weeds in the lanes between raised beds. It's even okay as a plant mulch as long as it doesn't touch the plant. In other words, none of these volcano mulch trees, those are dying very quickly. And as long as it's not spread deeper than 2 inches. After 2 inches, it doesn't allow rainwater to get through. But also, you have to make sure it's not near a light-colored house or a car, because wood mulch can breed a little nasty organism called artillery fungus that shoots little balls that look like tar at light-colored houses, especially the white vinyl siding you see so much.
And, yep, like my house.
Oh, those are living organisms, those tar balls. So they work their way into the vinyl. And if you don't get at them within 24 hours, you can't get them off. So it's heavily marketed. It's probably the worst mulch. And it certainly should never be used near disease-prone plants like tomatoes or roses or lilacs or dogwoods. In a fabulous study that I haven't referred to in a long time, three universities, there must have been 50 different sites. What was it? Ohio State University, Iowa State, and the University of Kentucky. They tested mulches on a huge scale in many different locations, and they found that 2 inches of yard waste compost, you know, the compost that municipalities make from people's collected leaves, suppressed weeds and held moisture in the soil just as well as 2 inches of wood mulch, and also fed the plants and caused no distress. The wood mulch, all the plants suffered and had to be heavily chemically fed to make up for the negative effects of the wood mulch. So the best mulch in our region in Pennsylvania is compost, which is readily available. You're seeing it more and more at home centers now and garden centers. And, of course, many municipalities have big composting sites. And if you're going to do that, you want to look at the compost. You want to make sure it's not wood trash, just under a phony name. And just smell it. Make sure it has no off smell. It should look nice and rich and black in color. And it should feel crumbly in your hand, not wet, not dry. And you'll find, for instance, as you go down south, as you travel further south, this wood mulch phenomenon doesn't occur. They use pine straw in their gardens, which is abundant down there and looks beautiful. But in your part of the country, my part of the country, compost mulch, 2 inches deep, you'll never go back.
Right. We have a dogwood tree that's looks like it's dying too, and we've been mulching for years, and probably that had something to do with it.
Oh, yes, yes. It's constantly breeding disease spores, and if it's touching the trunk, it's not allowing the trunk to dry out, which is essential for these plants.
All right, thank you.
All right, good luck, Patty.
Thank you, bye-bye.
1-888-346-9499. Josh, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. Thanks for taking my call.
Well, thank you for making it, Josh. Where are you, sir?
Annapolis, Maryland.
Oh, one of my favorite places, Annapolis, a drinking town with a sailing problem. What can we do for Josh? And really, I mean, Annapolis is one of the most beautiful places on Earth. It's just gorgeous, the water there.
Yeah, it's great. We don't do too much with our lawn other than cutting it at the recommended height. But last year, we had pretty aggressive growth of crabgrass. So this year, I wanted to apply some corn gluten meal to help control the crabgrass.
Well, there's a couple of things. First, I think you might have missed the window. I have been following the soil temperatures in the Maryland and D.C. area very specifically for the radio work I do locally there. And there is a federal soil probe at a place called Powder Mill, Maryland. And they have a very scientific setup there. They give you the real-time soil temperature at 2 inches, 4 inches, and 8 inches down. And all of these seed germination temperatures are geared to the temperature of the soil 4 inches down, which is kind of chilly. And I had looked at it like a week or two ago, and it was slowly moving up from like 42 to 45, and crabgrass seed germinates at 55. And, you know, the soil is like the ocean. It takes forever to warm up, but then in the fall it stays warm for a long time. Well, something happened this year that I've never seen before, and that's the soil temperature jumped 10 degrees in a week, and it did not seem to be an anomaly. It stayed up there. Now, this is also in a calendar year where we're coming out of a winter that worldwide is 4 degrees warmer than ever before. And I think that's one of the reasons, too, that crabgrass may be more of a problem for you right now than it has been in past years. These hot summers, this warming really favors crabgrass, and I presume you have a cool season a lawn, like
right.
Fescue or bluegrass. But what I'm going to suggest is I would still put down the amount of corn gluten meal that you are allowed to use. And just because there's no disadvantage, when you put the corn gluten down, wet it and then allow it to dry out. That's the way it inactivates seeds the most effectively. So let's say you're getting some on the back end there. But then, obviously, you're cutting at the right height. Make sure you have a sharp blade. Make sure you leave the cuttings on the lawn. And then, if you see these patches of crabgrass sprouting up, what I would suggest, you know, there is this new iron-based herbicide that is supposed to be very effective on weeds like this, but it's good for lawn grasses. Or you could just do the old-fashioned thing, and, you know, when you see a patch of crabgrass, it's pretty distinct. When the lawn is wet, you can probably pull out that entire patch of crabgrass.
Right.
But really what I want you to do is get yourself a flame weeder if you don't have one yet. You've probably heard me talk about these things for years. Burns-O-Matic makes one. It's very simple. It's like a shepherd's hook. You screw a camp stove-sized bottle of propane on one end. I like the ones that have the clicker igniters that are built in. And then a flame comes out the business end. So as we get into, say, mid-August, and your crabgrass is starting to set seed, go around to the patches of crabgrass and burn them. Get your timing right, and you will inactivate the crabgrass seeds before winter can even come. You know, crabgrass drops its seed in like September and then it survives winter and sprouts in the spring. Well, if you're torching those patches of crabgrass, you're going to destroy the seeds before anything can happen. And then that's the perfect time of year to throw a little compost or topsoil in that area and spread the seed of a matching grass. So I think what's happening is because of warming trends, because it's getting more difficult to predict the timing of our soil temperatures. And we also do want to respect these new lawn care laws because they're designed to protect the bay. I'm going to change my attitude and attack crabgrass in August more so than in the spring. It's going to be just as vulnerable, and that's also the best time for you to sow matching seed and go into the winter with a whole lawn. And then when springtime comes, if that lawn has been well kept, there's not going to be any crabgrass in it. So you got a plan.
I have a plan. Thanks.
All right. Good luck and enjoy the summer in your beautiful area.
All right. Take it easy.
You too.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will appear on Saturday, April 2nd at 1 p.m. and 4 p.m. at the Del Val Home Show at the Ice Works in Aston, PA. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with real weed warriors, hard truths about cool season grasses, and more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural gardening products and solutions. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com. And by Burpee, celebrating 140 years of introducing unique new varieties and providing treasured heirlooms, hardworking hybrids, live plants, garden supplies, and more. Burpee offers no treated seed or genetically modified organisms. More at burpee.com.
Welcome back to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia. I'm your host, Mike McGrath. Coming up later in the show, spring has sprung and many of you are noticing you have ratty lawns. Some of you can fix them now, some of you are going to have to wait, and we'll sort out who's who later in the show. We'll also take more of your fascinating phone calls, but now it is time for our interview on a topic that is close to my heart. We covered this story last year, and quite honestly, we'll probably cover it every year because this is a very important topic, helping returning veterans become organic farmers. Joining us today to discuss this very important topic are Emily Boell, who is the Organic Farming Program Coordinator at Delaware Valley University, who locals will know much better as Del Val, and Justin Barclay, the Veterans Farming Program Coordinator at the Rodale Institute out in Monksatawney. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you. Thank you very much for having us.
Oh, thank you for being had. Now, Emily Delval, as I call it, has had this organic farming program for 1, 2, 3 years now?
It was started in 2013. It's been going on for about 4 years now. And recently, they hired me to help run the program and get the word out and help our veteran students and civilian students in the program.
Right. Delval is what's called a yellow ribbon school. So
yes.
This has special appeal for returning veterans.
Yes. Since we're a yellow ribbon school, we can work with veterans who are using their GI benefits to pay for the tuition, and they also get a housing stipend. So if they're relocating, and most of the veterans in our program have relocated, they get a housing stipend to help them do that. So basically, we work with the VA, and we match their benefits.
Right, because one of the biggest problems in America is the lack of employment for returning veterans.
Yeah, absolutely.
And a poor homecoming. They get applause in airports, and then it's over.
Right. Yeah, so we're helping them with this one-year 36-credit certificate program. And then Justin helps them find job placements or farms or helps them find land to work on. Upon graduation.
So do they take all their classes at Delaware Valley University, or is there some hands-on experience at the Rodale Institute during that year?
They do 2 semesters at DelVal. We do have rolling enrollment, so you can start whenever you'd like. And they do classroom experience at DelVal, but they also work on local organic farms, and I place them on that farm. I work with the students to see where they want to be placed. And then they do a summer at Rodale, where they also take classroom courses, and they work at the Rodale farm.
So, Justin, do you find that by the time they get to you that they're pretty well prepared, or because it's a rolling thing, are you sometimes their first experience?
Mike, I would say it's actually a little bit of both. Sometimes we do get students where this is their final semester in the program, but we also have several students or potential students that this would be their first semester. So Rodale is not necessarily a capstone or the conclusion of their training. It's just where their summer semester actually occurs is at our farm in.
Right. And I should explain to people that the Rodale Institute was born out of the idea that J.I. Rodale had back in the 40s, an organization he called the Soil and Health Foundation. Correct. And then when J.I. passed away in 71, Robert Rodale bought like 333 acres, is it, of really nice farmland in the Kutztown area. So, Emily, now, when the potential students come to you, and before we started the interview, you made it clear that the program is open to anyone who wants to be an organic farmer, to be
Correct.
Professionally trained
Yes.
before they get into the business, but obviously a tremendous advantage to veterans with the Yellow Ribbon designation, and not only is all your tuition and everything covered, but, you know, you have living expenses during this time you're getting this post-service training.
Yes, that is correct. Yeah, the program's open to civilians and the veterans. It was started with veterans specifically in mind, but we have since opened it to anyone interested in the program. But since we are a Yellow Ribbon school, we have a veteran center on campus. We have a nice study lounge for them, a place for them just to come and relax. And we have a director of veteran affairs there who works with the students to help them with their benefits. Any kind of questions they have with the VA, he's kind of the liaison.
So, Justin, what actually led Rodale to get involved in this veterans program? And before I let you answer that, I'm using Rodale as shorthand, but we should make it clear that the Rodale Institute is a nonprofit organization that's totally separate from the company that publishes Prevention and Organic Gardening, Rodale, Inc.
Correct. We are the nonprofit, as you said. We just focus on research there and different training opportunities all directly related to agriculture. As far as the genesis of this program, it began about 4 years ago with our previous executive director who met with several veterans actually up in the state of Wisconsin, where they said that they wanted to learn about agriculture and specifically organic agriculture, and they found that there was not that many training opportunities available to them. Some were shorter in duration, you know, a week here, a week there, or maybe mumbled or jumbled together, but our executive director initially did some coordination with Russell Redding, who was the dean for that portion of DelVal at the time, who is now currently the Secretary of Ag for Pennsylvania. And they developed this program of, you know, initially focused on getting veterans who were specifically focused on organic agriculture and developing a training program. And we came up with this one-year certificate program, 36 credits, you know, the 2 semesters that they spend at DelVal in the spring and also in the fall and then the summer semester at our farm there at Rodale.
I worked for the company previously known as Rodale Press for 17 years and was a frequent visitor at the Rodale Institute. And it mimics Lancaster County in its look and the quality of the land. It's just Sylvan Fields. It's a beautiful place. What's the reaction when some of these veterans arrive there at the Institute? Because I imagine that a lot of these people are kind of battle-scarred. This would seem to be the balm that could soothe their wounds.
That's definitely been the case for some of the veterans that we have had come through the program. We had a National Guard soldier from upper New Jersey or New York area who deployed with his unit. They had a fairly rough time, and when he returned back home, he actually had a pretty high-powered job there on Wall Street, you know, definitely making over six figures, and he realized he couldn't go back to that type of lifestyle of working inside a cubicle and within those parameters, and he wanted to be outside. And organic agriculture allowed him to do a lot more hands-on activities with the plants, not just driving around in the tractor sitting up top, but actually being up close and personal. So that's just one instance. Other veterans have commented that they love working with their hands and just love to be outside in something that's a positive environment, not necessarily something that's, you know, so familiar with their military experience, but still allows them to be outside in a more positive setting.
Now, Emily, I'm very familiar with organic farming, small-scale farming, the people who either run CSAs, community-supported agriculture, sell at farmers' markets. There's many paths to selling your produce once you grow it. And I think one of the most important things to be a successful organic farmer, from my experience, are things that have nothing to do with growing plants. They're marketing and they're bookkeeping and they're learning how to balance things. And do you spend a lot of your course on helping them figure out how they're going to get the most bang for their broccoli buck?
Yes, we do. The students take a course called Marketing of Horticultural Products with Dr. Ricotta. And in that course, she kind of has them lay out their whole business plan and marketing strategy. So, and they also, we're looking at the curriculum and maybe ways that we can add more business classes to it under the agribusiness degree at Del Val. So there's a farm management course that the students could potentially take. And then there's just an agribusiness course. And then there's just the business degree at Del Val, where we might add the intro to marketing class if they just really want to focus on just the principles of marketing and it doesn't even have to be agricultural related.
Now, Justin, I think Emily said that one of the most important steps that you're a part of is when they've completed this course, you're going to try to find them a place to get started, right?
Correct. There's several different options out there. Different individuals contact either myself or Emily saying that they have a piece of land that they would like to have veterans work on. And a lot of these people have an organic focus for their agriculture. So that kind of combines kills two birds with one stone. They're able to help put veterans back to work and increase organic agriculture within the region. Some different nonprofits have contacted us and loaned different leases or different programs where they'll lease 1 or 2 or 3 acres to a veteran for a certain amount of years and allow them to grow it for either free or very minimal cost to help them get started for their individual programs. As people may or may not know, that there's a big need for farmers within the United States as a whole. They say the average age of a farmer is 58 or 59 years old, depending what region you're talking about.
And most of the time, the kids do not want to take over the farm.
No, and that's definitely the case. A lot of younger generations, maybe they grew up on the farm, maybe they want nothing to do with it because they want to do something else with their lives. And, you know, between family farms, people loaning, different nonprofits that have access to land that want the land to be used in an organic manner, just different nonprofits wanting to help put veterans back to work. So those are the different avenues.
Now, Emily, have you passed anyone through your entire program yet?
We have passed people through the program. I unfortunately wasn't there for that, but these students that will be heading to Rodale this summer will have 4 new graduates from the program, 3 of which are women veterans who are very, very focused. 2 of them are sisters who made their way from Baraboo, Wisconsin, with the goal in mind to go back to their tribe. They're Native American. They're from the Ho-Chunk Nation.
Good Lord, they're everything.
Yeah, they're everything. And they're amazing, they're amazing girls. Like, they should be here talking about the program as well.
Were they in the military together, or did they separate for that?
I think they did a stint together, but they separated. They were both in the Army. their goals, though, are so inspiring to work with them because they want to go back to Wisconsin and kind of teach organic farming to their tribe and provide healthy food to their local community. So it's been really great to work with them.
Well, it's a great program. We really support it here at You Bet Your Garden.
Thank you.
So, Emily, if people want more information, where exactly do they go?
They can go to delval.edu/organic, and I'll take you right to the organic farming page. And I also have a Facebook page as well, so please like it.
And, Justin, is there more information at the Rodale Institute webpage?
Yep. We also have some other veterans programs as well. If you're a veteran out there and this one-year certificate program does not align directly with the training you'd like to get, you can go ahead and contact us at rodaleinstitute.org/veterans. My contact information is there. We have links to the DelVal program and to our other veterans programs as well.
All right. Well, keep up the good work and best wishes for continued success. Thanks for coming into the studio today.
Thanks for having us.
Thank you very much for having us.
And now back to your fascinating phone calls at 1-888-346-9499. Robert, welcome to You Bet Your Garden.
Hi, Mike. How's it going?
I am doing just ducky today. Robert, how are you, sir?
Doing all right.
And where is Robert doing all right?
In Los Angeles, Southern California.
Okay, out on the left coast. Always nice to hear from our friends out there. What can we do for Robert in L.A.?
I just started a garden this year, and I've been wanting to get into composting because of how strongly you recommend it. However, out here, we just don't have access to the fall leaves that you guys do out on the East Coast.
Right.
So I've started sniffing around, looking for a place that'll have lots of fallen leaves or organic material, and I think I've found a plentiful supply. The problem is all the dried leaves come from eucalyptus trees, and I've heard that there's a resin and an oil in eucalyptus that kind of suppresses other plants from growing around them.
I don't know about that part. But I do know that eucalyptus in general is highly bioactive. There is a lemon-scented eucalyptus plant that is actually used to make what might today be the best natural mosquito repellent. And I believe eucalyptus leaves in general have been used to repel insects, like put inside cabinets in the home to keep out pantry moths and ants and things like that. I'm not sure that they should be mixed in to a compost pile, but I think that if I were you, I would shred them up and I would either surround my beds with them, you know, in kind of the pathways, and experiment using them as an insect or even animal repellent.
Okay.
Now, obviously, you want to make compost to feed your plants and, you know, use in your beds and stuff.
Right.
Do you have a lot of kitchen waste?
I live alone, so I don't have a ton.
Okay. Because
I drink a lot of coffee, so I have coffee grounds as well, which you always recommend adding to a compost.
Right.
As a source of nitrogen.
Right. And what I'm getting to is there are really nice stackable worm bins that you can fit even in an apartment that only take up like a square foot or a square foot and a half. And you put all your coffee grounds and your vegetable waste into that, and you cover it with shredded newspaper. And then the worms quickly turn that into worm castings,
okay,
which are even better than compost. And since you're in L.A., the worm bin could be outside as long as it was in a shady area.
Yeah. I have a place I had in mind. I had looked into worm bins before.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, and I have a place that just would be perfect for it. It's in the shade. It doesn't get blasted by the sun on the hottest parts of the summer.
Yeah. No, I think you have the climate where these things can be outdoors, certainly all winter long. Now, I will tell you that I think about your problem often because I am this compost advocate. And a couple years ago, my wife and I had a great time. I did a garden talk in Boca Grande, Florida for the garden club down there. Beautiful area. And I noticed that the time of year we were there, the garden workers were doing a lot of trimming of the palm trees, you know, taking out the brown material. And I examined it and worked with it a little bit and thought this would be the perfect material to substitute for dry leaves, these browned out parts of the palm trees. They shredded very easily. They didn't have any of that strong botanical smell or anything. And,
oh, yeah, there's a ton of it around.
Yeah, exactly. And guys are constantly pruning it, right?
Right. If they're not pruned, all the brown leaves just kind of hang around the trunk.
Yeah, and, exactly. You can just take them off. But I think that's your substitute for fall leaves in an outdoor pile. I think that's a great substitute for the deciduous tree leaves that I have.
All right, great.
All right, and I want you to experiment with the eucalyptus leaves. I mean, you know, maybe have an extra bed with some test plants in it and use the shredded leaves as a mulch and see if the plants react negatively to it and or if those plants wind up being free of insect attack.
Yeah, I'll check it out.
All right, Robert, good luck and enjoy the sunshine.
All right, thanks so much.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Well, it's time for me to take a little break and announce that I will appear in the Oklahoma City area twice on Earth Day Eve. That's Thursday, April 21st. I'll give a talk on composting at the University of Central Oklahoma at 3 p.m. Thursday afternoon, and then promote pollinators in a KGOU-sponsored evening event at the fabulous Myriad Botanic Gardens right in the middle of town. But don't go looking for all the details at the events section of our website just yet, because we'll be right back with hot and cold running lawns and more of your fabulous phone calls. I'm Mike McGrath, and you're listening to You Bet Your Garden from WHYY in Philadelphia.
Support for You Bet Your Garden is provided by the Espoma Company, offering a complete selection of natural gardening products and solutions. More information about Espoma and the Espoma Natural Gardening Community can be found at espoma.com. And by Burpee, celebrating 140 years of introducing unique new varieties and providing treasured heirlooms, hardworking hybrids, live plants, garden supplies, and more. Burpee offers no treated seed or genetically modified organisms. More at burpee.com.